It's Electrospective. I'm Jason Bentley, and here with Mr. Junkie XL, Tom Holkenborg. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. And you?
Very good. Thank you for joining us. And just as a bit of background for you, Electrospective is an appreciation, a retrospective on electronic music, but really through your experiences and your eyes and your ears. So I am interested in your background and really what first attracted you to this broad genre. I mean, do you have a sense of kind of the first electronic record that kind of made you, you know, prick up your ears and say, what is that?
Back in the 80s, I listened to a lot of really well-produced electronic music bands like Yellow and even Kraftwerk and the productions of Frankie Goes to Hollywood and stuff like that. So I loved electronic music and I loved the dance aspect of that as it occurred in that time period.
Is this on the radio?
That stuff was over the radio. I mean, and I was...
just a kid.
Yeah, I was like 14, 15 years old listening to that stuff. But I remember that a friend of mine actually brought back a record from Detroit, which was like, it must have been like 86 or 87, which was just a simple rhythm on a 808, do, 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 like very simple. And I was like, what the hell is this? You know, I wasn't really positive about it. I was like, this is horrible. This is not musical. This is horrible.
But I kind of like it.
But no, I didn't like it at that point. And what was really interesting that, like, I think a year later or so, a friend took me to a party and then it hit me. It was like, wait a minute. It's not about production. It's not about the sound of that individual track. It's about what that whole night is. And I don't even remember who spun that night. But I knew it was like extremely fresh. And this was like early 90s in Holland.
Do you happen to remember what the record was or who made it? Or
no, I have no idea. I have no idea. But then later I got picked up on the first dance records that were being made with the Italian influence into it. And I really, really liked that part. And I think the first dance records that I really hit me hard were the first record of Eat Static, which was part of Dovetail Records. And then pretty soon after that, the KLF.
Right. Now, this is the late 80s?
No, this is 92, I think, like 92, 93.
And Eat Static, if my memory serves me correctly, was more of really the out there psychedelic
totally
kind of thing.
Yeah, it was totally psychedelic. I really loved it. I really loved it. And then for me, I love the club music, but what really did it for me were all the alternative takes on what club music was. So when the Chemical Brothers started, when Orbital started, when Underworld started, that for me really was like a home run. Because you had the electronic music as you were able to listen to it in the clubs, but it had like more attitude to it and it had vocals and guitar samples and bass samples and all that stuff. I really like that.
When I think back of the earliest incarnation of Junkie XL, it was more of a rock and attitude kind of thing. So I'm assuming that you were coming from influences like that, like alternative and industrial and all of that. But as it collided with this whole breakbeat, early 90s, breakbeat rave kind of movement.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the bands that I was in, I was signed like late 80s with my industrial band, and which were me and Phil Mills, and the band was called Nerve. And I worked with the guys from Front 242 on that, and we toured with people from Ministry, Revolting Cocks, and that was the scene I was in. So for me, the development from that to dance music version of that was not a big step, because we were using four on the floor rhythms already in that time period, but it was packed with metal guitars and it was packed with a whole lot of yelling and screaming.
Now, you don't strike me as a particularly angry person.
Not anymore.
So, you know, as you evolved, looking back at how many years really can you credit as sort of the career of Junkie XL now?
The producer's name, Junkie XL, started from 95. So that's now 17 years, roughly. And that's a long time. But actually, I already did things before that under a different name, A Forest Called Mulu. My first remixes that I did, and the first tracks that I put out that eventually became Junkie XL, I did under a different name first. But there are tracks that I did with Nerve that could easily, you know, could have ended up on the earlier Junkie XL records, because they were really hard and had that live feeling to it.
What would you say is a common thread, you know, for all the different albums and different creative approaches that you've taken in your music? Can you describe, I mean, is there a common thread of what it is that's Junkie XL? I mean, how do you describe it?
My music has, in general, a very uplifting energy. It consists out of many, many different production layers. I don't make tracks. I wish I could. Like, for instance, Daft Punk, just one great beat and one really kick-ass synthesizer line. I'm not that kind of writer. So many different layers of production, and there's always a mix between organic elements and electronic elements.
We also know that in more recent years, you've turned your attention to film scoring, which is a whole different mindset. And takes a special level of dedication. But let's talk a little bit about what drew you into that world. You know, the club scene and the dramatic nature of this music, from very beautiful and melodic to hard driving, you know, all of this energy of drama does exist in the club world. Was it a natural growth and extension for you to move into film?
For me, it was. It felt very natural. I worked on my first film in 95, and then I was involved on a couple of projects after that. And I decided to move to LA by 2003 to really, really focus on film scoring. But not in a sense that, oh, let's make a bunch of electronic tracks and get them placed, you know, as a license, or to do a film that basically just consists out of club music, which I think, if you run into the right movie, that could be a score for a movie. But in general, working on a score, you need to work with completely different set of parameters and set of tools that you need as a person.
Who do you see out there who's from an electronic background, who's successfully made the jump? You know, in especially in recent years, we've seen a lot of exciting movement. We've seen, you know, Trent Reznor win an Academy Award.
Yeah.
You know, Daft Punk have made a proper film score. Looking out at that world, who do you really kind of admire how they've done? Is anyone doing it really well?
I think Trent Reznor does it really well, because what is really unique about the music that he makes, I've been following Nine Inch Nails for a really long time, and he has always made those really dark ambient soundscapes, and usually they were available as a free download, or he would do something unique with them, not necessarily his albums. And I was especially surprised that he made that jump to film scoring, because you know, there were stories about what kind of guy it was to work with back in the 90s, but also early 2000s.
His reputation.
Yeah, his reputation. Like
just
that.
Not being compromising at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I found it very, very interesting that he, out of all people, did that. And also how he did it, and also how he continues to keep his voice when it comes to where he stands for musically, but also makes it work in the film world.
That is a really good point, because being part of a film is a truly collaborative experience.
Yes.
So you can't have that kind of attitude of no compromise, you know?
No, it doesn't work. It's definitely a team spirit. And the trick is how, within the team spirit, you're able to maintain your voice and to add something new that is not there or hasn't been done yet. And with electronic music, it's very simple that the club music as we know it, it's hard to make a film score out of that. You need so many more tools to make it work over a whole film. It also depends, of course, what kind of film you work on. If it's like The Fast and the Furious, you know, you probably get away with a lot of really fast-paced club track editing. But at a certain point, you know, when you're talking about a thriller and there are all these weird things happening and a person goes from being a very comfortable guy and throughout the film, he just completely starts losing it and doesn't know who he is anymore. And then on top of that, you know, his parents die. And on top of that, he loses his wife and stuff. I mean, which elements from electronic tracks would you use to describe that emotion and how would that work and how would that play out? And that's the knowledge that you really need to get down when you get into film scoring. And then you look at the palette that you have, not only as an electronic musician, but by that time also as a, you know, an orchestral writer, an orchestral arranger, is like, which tools do I have to describe this emotion at best? And how does it make sense overall in a 19-minute or 100-minute film?
Now, since the this program, Electrospective, is in part, you know, an education and looking back on the history of electronic music, I want to ask you about older composers who maybe have emphasized electronic music in their scores. Are there any classic scores that you want to point out and for our audience say, you know, if you don't know about this film score, if you don't know about this composer, go check this out because this person was really on the leading edge of right. doing something interesting.
Well, there are two for me. One is Vangelis, who did Blade Runner. Blade Runner, for me, an iconic movie. And I think it came out in 82, 83. And it's this sci-fi movie about robots. And the score is so well executed by Vangelis. And every time when I hear it, it just takes me, not only takes me back to that time, but also why are we not doing this now? And it's a classic score. And the second one is Giorgio Moroder's Scarface. Like how he uses this obvious synth sounds with, you know, with other organic elements. The most beautiful scene that just pops in my head is when Scarface's sister is dancing with her boyfriend in the disco, and he sits there with Michelle Pfeiffer in the corner, and they're all having drinks. And then he just looks at his sister, and then her boyfriend just grabs her by her butt, and he starts losing it. And you hear like this synthesizer tone coming in, and it gets louder, and it gets completely out of control, which ends up him jumping up and beating some people up in that club. So that is another really classic example of a good electronic score.
Well, turning from film music and you know, to Junkie XL and music, let's try and pinpoint some very key tracks for you. And, you know, maybe they're obscure, maybe even chronological. Let's start late 80s for a track, unless you have something earlier.
Well, it's earlier, actually. The first track that really blew my mind was Love Like Blood, Killing Joke. And that was like 83, 84, maybe even 85. Let's do like 95.
All right.
That track Chemical Beats by the Chemical Brothers.
Uh-huh.
I saw the Chemical Brothers play on Coachella. And then you've seen all these other new electronic acts play, you know, from A-Track to Diplo to Aoki, you know, the whole new scene of electronic big names. And then I was standing on the hill, and then that track came, the Chemical Beats. Yeah. They were like the main act on the stage, and how fresh it sounded, and still, you know, with that attitude, and it's like 15 years old, you know?
So let's skip to the end of the decade, 97, 98. What tracks there jump out?
I really loved Music Sounds Better With You. What makes it so cool, and I think I've always loved dance tracks that did that, that had like a four-bar loop, but it never got boring. You know, could play it over and over and over again. And the only change that is in the track is when all the music stops and it's like, and then it starts all over again. Then in the 2000s, and also when the social media got bigger and the internet became more important in spreading music started popping up everywhere.
And where were you with Junkie XL at around that time in 2002, 2003?
For me, that was an important year because in 2002, I had that number one hit worldwide with Elvis, A Little Less Conversation, the remix that I did for the Nike commercial. Mm-hmm. And then 2003, Radio JXL came out, and that was the album where I collaborated with all my 80s heroes, from Robert Smith to Dave Gahan, Chuck D, Terry Hall, Solomon Burke, Gary Newman. It was a great list of people.
Well, tell us a little more about your new album. What's the title, and when's it coming out?
The album is called Synthesized, and it's coming out November 27th. And the single is coming out October 23rd, which is called Gloria. This album is a completely different album than the ones I did before. The other albums, I locked myself up for 6-7 months, and I would open the vault. And with a little steam coming out of it, I would deliver the CD to my record company, say, okay, this is it. And for this record, partly because I've never done it, and partly because I thought, you know, I really want to try something else. So I teamed up with an A&R person, who is usually a person at a record label that signs an artist, but also helps you throughout your career to develop and give new ideas. So basically I hired him, Joost van Bellen, as an external A&R guy. And Joost is somebody, he's a little over 50, and he's a legendary DJ from Holland, and he's been known for being always on the front where music happens, and he knows so many musicians.
Tell us your favorite track, for whatever reason it is. What's your favorite on the album?
My favorite track is the last track of the album, which is called The Art of Luxurious Intergalactic Time Travel. And that track is a homage to the beautiful, beautiful work that The Orb did. And basically groundbreaking records that they did, and experimenting with ambient and with synths and with weird samples. And it started as something really sweet and small, but it got so dubby and it got so out of control, and it turned into this piece of like 12 or 13 minutes or something. And that particular piece I feel the most closest to.